show rolling. All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yes, this is Kevin and Psychic Tom Fagent with a red hot crystal ball. Time to go. And hopefully, a crystal ball is picking the Eagles to win. That's it.
Yes, sir. And we got plenty to talk about this week. A whole lot of stuff going on. Of course, horrible, horrible end of the career of Bernard Hopkins. Shitty way to go out, literally out of the ring. And a brutal knockout there against Joe Smith Jr. And apparently he probably could have gotten back in.
I'm not the only one thought of that Joe Louis ending with Rocky Marciano. I'm sure that's the first thing that came to a lot of people's head.
Yes.
comments I've read have actually referenced that.
I'll say, unlike Joe Louis, Bernard, I only got to see clips of the fight because I had worked so much that day. I had fallen asleep, and then I was woken up in the middle of the night to find that Hopkins was knocked out and knocked out of the ring, and I was whoa, you know. Smith is a big, strong kid. He's a hell of a puncher, especially with that right hand. So I watched some of the highlights the next day, and a couple of the things that came to mind was, and I was reading a lot of people's updates as the fight was going on that we were posting on Facebook, and one of the prevalent notions was that Hopkins' legs weren't all there. And I remember when he fought Kovalev 2 years ago, I wrote my prediction on that one, and I picked Hopkins to win. I picked him to really frustrate Kovalev, but I know some people were saying it's going to be Kovalev by knockout. Other people were saying Hopkins is just going to, you know, do what he does, and it's going to beat him.
He was going to Pavlik him. That's a verb now, by the way, Pavlik.
Yeah. So, and I remember getting ready to watch that fight against Kovalev, and they're in the locker room, and Hopkins was working the pads, doing his warm-up, and I remember turning, and I said, he's not going to win this fight. I said, he looks like an old man right now, and now he got knocked down in that fight, he got shut out in that fight, I said, but coming into this fight with Joe Smith, you know, I said, okay, Kovalev is a world-class fighter, he's one of top, but right now he's a devastating puncher, but he showed he had better skills than he was advertised for. So I said, okay, maybe this kid Joe Smith, who's a big, kind of crude, straightforward kind of guy, construction worker, he looks the part. I said, you know, maybe, just maybe, he can Pavlik him, as you said, or Tito Trinidad, you know? You know, get him to come straight in and use his angles and all this. And from what I saw, you know, Hopkins was getting hit more than really I've ever seen him get hit before. Smith was landing some clean shots, and then Hopkins would have the times where he would, you know, move to the side, land a right hand, you know, juke him, you know, land a shot, pivot out. I'm like, so there were spurts when he still had some of his skills, but for the majority of it, his legs weren't there, and he was getting hit with shots that, you know, this kid would have been 5 seconds behind, even 6-7 years ago. So, you know, and then coming to the eighth round, that the right hand that he got hit with on the ropes, you could see definitely hurt him. And then he got hit with, you know, the two left hooks that knocked him out of the ring. I think it was, you know, a poor display that the people just literally let him fall and land on his head. You know, I know you're not supposed to help a fighter back into the ring, but you shouldn't let the man fall and possibly, you know, fracture his skull where his neck.
Yeah.
And then Hopkins like, oh, I hurt my ankle, I can't get back in. And it's like, wait a minute, it's like, how did you hurt your ankle? Landed on your head, maybe when he twisted it against the ropes or something. I don't know, I'm not a doctor. And then it leads you to two theories on there. One, you know, did other time lift the guy, you know, did he get hurt falling out of the ring? Or was it Hopkins being Hopkins? Because you've seen it happen before. You've seen it happen against Robert Allen, where he got pushed out of the ring and I think he hurt his ankle, you know, and they called it a no contest. They fought a few months later. Hopkins knocked him out. It happened the first fight against Chad Dawson where they got in a clinch. Hopkins went down and he dislocated his shoulder. Like I called it a no contest. They fought a few months later. This time Dawson won. He had a fight against Roy Jones, the second fight, where, you you know, Jones hit him in the back of the head and Hopkins was, you know, rolling on the ground for a few minutes. Was he trying to buy his way out of the fight, get it called a no contest, or possibly a disqualification? You know, you can't say that. I mean, in a way, you want to give the guy the benefit of the doubt. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but at the same time, Father Time is undefeated.
Yeah.
So whether you're an executioner, an alien, or whatever, you don't beat Father Time.
Yeah, the bystander...
Right, undefeated, and I think Bernard has nothing to be ashamed of.
I think the only bystander there that had a chance to help Bernard was the cameraman, and he was too busy getting the shot of Bernard going all the way to the floor. And it made vines pretty fast the night it happened, and I actually saw it first on Twitter. And the one thing that I kept thinking over and over again as I watched the clip again and again was... Joe Smith Jr. didn't even bother to check on the guy. He just turns around and starts jumping up and down. The guy's out of the fucking ring on the concrete. He don't care. He won the fight. You know, that's he's jumping up. I was like, wow. You know, I guess you can't control yourself in the moment.
I did my job.
Yeah. Yeah, that was crazy.
Well, we all would agree, even before the fight, he has a puncher's chance. I don't care who he fights.
Yep.
Yep.
Tom told me to bet on him.
That last summer.
Tom told me to bet on him, but I didn't believe him. Anyway, yeah, Bernard, poor guy, but hell of a career, and tough one. That's what happens though when you pick that kind of a guy for your last fight. You know, sometimes you really got to pick a guy you know you can beat for your last fight, and. When you have a situation like that, you feel really bad about, you know, the fact that the guy obviously is capable of getting in there, you know, can still earn a license and everything, but here he is getting his ass kicked by a younger guy, and it's no joke, you know, the age factor. I'll tell you this funny story. It's not so funny for the guy that got hurt, but up here in Laconia, New Hampshire, I'm not sure it was actually Laconia, but it was, you know, pretty close to where I live here in New Hampshire. A 60-something-year-old guy got punched 3 times by a 30-something-year-old guy drinking beers at a party. A 30-year-old guy hurt the guy so bad, the other guy had to be fucking airlifted to the hospital. Airlifted. 3 punches. 3 punches. So,
where did that happen, Rich?
Right up here in New Hampshire, just recently, like a couple nights ago.
But, I mean, not in a ring, I'm assuming.
No, just bare-fisted, but still. I mean, that's a 30-year age difference.
This was like in a bar? It happened in a bar?
At somebody's house. That's just 3 punches, the guy said he hit him with. That's it. Put him out. Said, you got him? Got in my face? I put him out of my face. That was the guy's quote to the cops.
Hey,
yikes. Yep. So that's what happens when confrontations in the steam room go too far. Right, Tony? Anyway. Yeah, crazy stuff. But we got a lot of boxing going on. Actually, not a lot of boxing or MMA going on this weekend. But there's a lot of end-of-the-year stuff going on to talk about. The big fight this weekend is actually tomorrow night in Quebec, Canada. Artur Beterbiev, coming in at 10-0, fighting Isidro Ranoni Prieto, who is 26-1-3. That's for the WBA and ABA light heavyweight title. And that's over in Quebec. Up in Quebec, we should say. The vacant Italy cruiserweight title is on the line as well, over in Toscana, Italy. I didn't know you were fighting this weekend, Tony.
Yeah. Trying to keep it under
wraps. Fabio is fighting, actually. Fabio Turchi, 8-0, fighting Maurizio Lavaglio, who is 20-12. Fabio undefeated at 8-0. Pretty good fight there. That's really a good one on that one. Yeah, there's not a whole heck of a lot going on. It's a pretty decent one in Kiev, Ukraine. It's good main event, anyway. Andriy Rudenko, he's got 30 wins, 2 losses, and he's fighting Jason Bergman, who's 26-12-2. That's for the WBC International Silver Heavyweight title. Oh, I think we got the mismatch of the week in Belgium. Looks like it's Delphine Persoon. He is 37-1, fighting Everline Odiero. He is 7-8-2.
Ouch.
And has not had a win in a while. 7 wins, 8 losses, 2 draws.
Someone needs a win and someone needs a payday.
Exactly. And, you do have a Jesus fight of the week, as few fights as we have this week. Because it's the only Jesus fight of the week. but it's the main event in Venezuela, and it's for a title. The vacant Venezuelan super welterweight title. Jesus Perez is the contender. He is 3-1-1, fighting Jonathan Rojas, who is 3-2-1. Jesus has left the building. All right, and we got some other boxing news. Some pretty shady boxing news in Russia.
Something like that.
Russia continues to set the tone for doping as a state secret method of competition. We got some situations going on here with Alexander Povetkin. Now he just dispatched this guy Jonathan or Johan Duhaupes the other night. Just destroyed him. But the question became, what the hell was Johan Duhaupes doing there in the first place? How did he just happen to be in Ekaterinburg, Russia, the other night when all this stuff went down? Because Povetkin wasn't supposed to fight him. He was supposed to fight Fermain Stiverne for a title, the vacant WBC interim title. And this is only because Deontay Wilder, who is the champion, is recovering from some surgeries, so he wasn't able to make his mandatory defense. But he was about to make that defense against Povetkin on May 21st, but then a week beforehand the fight was canceled because Povetkin tests positive for meldonium. And I remember reading about that, and there was something about that just being added recently to the list of banned substances. So a lot of people said, you know, he kind of gets a pass for that. But he got off on a technicality, and then they put him together with Stiverne for this interim title, so then the winner would go face Wilder. And Stiverne did get also popped for a banned stimulant called DMAA, but he had a different situation. He actually claimed and said the tester witnessed him drinking the 5-hour energy drinks, I guess, have this shit in it. So he blamed an energy drink for his test, but so ridiculous stuff. Don Bermain Stiverne said, "I was shocked when I heard the news. But when I arrived back home, I thought about how it all played out, and I added 2 plus 2. It all came together. Beginning last Tuesday, they told me they have a replacement if I pull out of the fight, and they kept saying it throughout the week. I actually thought it was something just to distract me, but they seemed to know about it all week." So it sounds like they knew that he was going to fail this test. And this time he failed it for the banned muscle-building substance Ostarine. And this result came to light just 20 hours before the fight. So the WBC took away the sanction, and Stiverne flew home. Already went to Russia for all this. Flew home. He's one of Don King's fighters. So imagine Don King did a solid for him and paid for his flight. But who knows. But both guys are pretty pissed off. Stiverne actually could have made $1,424,250 on this fight. And then if he won, he could have got $316,000 and $500 as a bonus. $316,500. So, yeah, he could have made almost $2 million for this. But instead, he said, nope, you know, not to fight a dirty fighter. And he went home. Unbelievable. So Russian regulators allowed this fight to go forward while Stiverne was on his way to the airport. And, just unbelievable. And the only reason he said he was there was to fight for the title. That's another reason why he decided not to take the fight forward. Don King said, "It's sad, but this guy Povetkin has become a total embarrassment. He's now tested positive in two WBC heavyweight title fights in a row. I'm all for winning and losing fights in the ring, but it's time for justice to prevail. I don't know what's going on over there with so many Russian athletes and so many sports testing positive for drugs, but it has to stop."
Yeah, you know it's bad when you have Don King calling for justice on you. You know, where's the irony here, okay?
Yeah.
God, that would be a new level.
Yes. Unbelievable. Anyway. Don King thinks that this should mean that his guy, Stavern, should be just automatically named the interim champ, but the WBC obviously doesn't agree with that. Don King is pretty pissed. He says, "I'm pretty disappointed for Bermain, who's now gone through two training camps with nothing to show for it. Why put up all that money for travel and expenses and then have no fight? He was ready to beat Povetkin and regain a part of the WBC title, and then worse yet, for them to try and put it on Bermain for not fighting is just ludicrous." Borrowed a word from Tyson. Or maybe Tyson borrowed that word from him, I guess. Yeah, who knows? Don King says, "They're taking the victim and trying to set him up as the criminal in this." And, you know, it's kind of crazy for the WBC to be involved in this because they just initiated their clean boxing program. So, not cool. Not cool at all. Anyway, so, yeah, pretty shady shit going on in Russia with Povetkin. And it's being called the two pieces of all two pieces. Tony, I don't know if you caught this knockout, but... Hassan Ndamukong, sure you've heard of him, had a crazy knockout over Alfonso Blanco over the weekend. Did you see that?
You know what? I did not see it, but I did hear about it.
You probably...
Someone was like, "Damn, knockout of the year." I didn't even know what they're talking about because I read it when I was asleep.
I don't know where in the world the fight was, but you might have heard the punch when it landed. It was so hard. It was a Rocky Marciano right. Unbelievable. It's more the second punch than the first one, but it was just basically a 1-2, very first round. He came out and popped him with barely a jab, and then hit him with the right, and just out go the lights, and Blanco, his mind went Blanco, and his face went right off the canvas. Face first. It was like chopping down a tree. It's basically, you know, doing that back cut, watching the tree flop. You know, that's what he did with that right hand. He did that back cut, and 3-1 down. Game over. Unbelievable. So I'll have to send you the video. I got the link. Pretty wild. Good stuff. Anyway, anything else we missed from last week, boxing-wise? Can you remember anything, Tony? Can you hear me now?
Well, it's not me. Yes. You see, like, when guys get hit and...
You're breaking up, Tony. Start that again?
I can hear you clear.
Oh, there you go. You were saying guys get hit what?
I was watching a video the other day, just some different knockouts, and you see the guys get hit and they go down, and their legs are all flailing and everything. Yeah, you know, they have like no. It's like they're out of control of like their limbs.
Yes, it's sometimes funny, but not so funny.
Crazy stuff. Yeah, not funny to be on the receiving end.
And speaking of performance-enhancing drugs, we just got off that subject in boxing. It's also raising its head in MMA recently because Mark Hunt has come out and publicly criticized this deal with Brock Lesnar. Who beat Mark Hunt in his latest UFC fight this past July. And the Nevada Athletic Commission, I believe, or whatever organization, USADA, whoever puts the suspensions out there, suspended Brock for 1 year, fined him $250,000, and had his win revoked following this failed drug test for UFC 200. Hunt says it's not enough. And he said it's not harsh enough considering he gets the same punishment as John Jones. And Jones didn't fight, said Hunt. He said, would that penalty have sufficed if I had died or been maimed? Good question. A faulty foot cream is what Lesnar is blaming for this penalty, believe it or not. Foot cream. You know what I mean? You know that foot cream?
Well, I mean, you gotta find a reason somewhere.
You know, when you got athlete's foot, you need to put a shitload of testosterone on your feet, right? You know, that's what they told me to do. Anyway, he made $2.5 million for this fight, so that's basically 10% of his purse. Unbelievable. I don't know. Did I do that tax math right, Tom? 10% of his purse. $2.5 million. What is that? 10% of that. What is that? Quick math, Tom.
$250,000.
$250,000. All right. I'm not a...
There you go.
I'm not so bad. All right. But Hunt said something interesting. A lot of people might not read into this too much. They don't know the history of this whole thing, but he said, I am still waiting on UFC. Will they allow my clause, or will we get into a lawsuit so the whole world can watch? And you might not know what he means by my clause, but I'm pretty sure he has demanded that he get all of Brock Lesnar's pay for that fight.
The point was raised that they fined Lesnar, but the money went to the Nevada State Athletic Commission.
Right.
And fair enough. They didn't have to go in the cage with a roided out Brock Lesnar. That was Mark Hunt. So why would Hunt care how much he was fined if Hunt didn't get a penny of it? It's nuts.
Right. Ridiculous. And he does have a fight coming up. They just announced a fight of his, I believe. I'm not sure who it was, but I'm pretty sure I saw that he's got a fight coming up. And then other PED violation, potential violation, Chris Cyborg Justino. And ironically, for the first time, this could be a technicality for her. She's taken some medication for being sick from her weight cutting for her last fight. There's a lot of interesting stuff about this development because, they're not really slamming her from the UFC yet, even though UFC President Dana White once said she looked like Wanderlei Silva in a dress, I believe was his quote. The UFC has come out and said, under the UFC anti-doping policy, there is a full, fair legal review process that is afforded to all athletes before any sanctions are imposed. Consistent with all previous potential anti-doping violations, additional information or UFC statements will be provided at the appropriate time as the process moves forward. And do you want the translation, guys? Give it time. That's the translation. Give it time, we'll figure out what the fuck is going on, and we might let you know. Cyborg says, what I can say now is that they are talking to my doctor, and I'm calm. Everybody knows I'm sick. That I'm recovering from the weight cut I had to do for the fight. What is happening is, post-weight cut, everybody knows I'm sick. They are talking to my doctor to solve this the best way. It's nothing bad, I'm on medical treatment. So, you know, she does have a history of testing positive for some bad stuff, so. Luke Thomas says, from a PR standpoint alone, the one fighter who couldn't afford even a potential violation is Cyborg. So, not too good for her. Doesn't look good. And, also, it comes at a bad time with Holly Holm and Jermaine de Rondami fighting for the featherweight title at UFC 208 on February 11th. And Cyborg was pretty much lined up to take on the winner. So if this turns out to be something serious, probably not going to happen. Probably going to be dealing with a suspension. So it is what it is there. Then we've got some UFC fights to talk about. Bellator as well. Molawal versus Satoshi Ishii turned out to be pretty much a dud. It went all three rounds, but thank God it wasn't five, a lot of people might say, because it was pretty sloppy and ugly. Satoshi really didn't pose much of a threat. But the guy I interviewed not too long ago, Daniel Weichel, did a great job. Got a arm triangle choke. Fours were wild. 4:44 into the very first round. Did a great job over Brian Moore there. We also had Sinead Kavanaugh got a win over Alina Kalyanidou. Unanimous decision there. And James Gallagher beat Anthony Taylor by rear naked choke in the third round. 1:52 into that one. And earlier in the night, there was a TKO. 20 seconds in, Cameron Else took out Dylan Tuke there. And that was it for that one. Nice little Friday night show over in Dublin. And Paige Van Zandt might need to invest more in her dancing skills and try to stay away from girls like Michelle Waterson, who was really amped up for this one. Just totally took it to her. Michelle got the win by technical submission, rear naked choke. The very first round, 3 minutes and 21 seconds into it. I think Paige, just like Ronda, got kind of trapped up in the hype and just was sleeping at the wheel there for a minute. didn't take advantage of her best skills in that opportunity. But Michelle was just raring to go. Yeah, she just didn't look top of her game, Paige Van Zandt. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, she her ground game has work. She really has to work harder. And what I didn't like in the aftermath, these critics and know-it-alls saying, well, maybe she needs a new career. I mean, come on, give her a break. She's 22 years old.
Yes.
Yeah. And there were some corners were just kind of writing her off at this point that she has other options and everything. But I think she just came up short. She's got to work more on the ground. It's that simple.
Yeah, and Michelle was way more well-rounded, you know, coming in with a 14-4 record, twice as many wins as Paige has, and it was just technical from the very beginning. I mean, it was like she wanted to land the first punch, basically, and that sometimes I've noticed that's how it goes. I mean, actually, there was a guy on this card and earlier in the night, Luis Henrique da Silva. Okay, here's a guy who, this is a perfect example of the UFC pay scale being fucked up. Okay, Luis, I think we talked about him last week, how excited he was for this fight, you know, and he got this $50,000 bonus for his last fight. And, you know, he was expecting to get another knockout of the night or performance of the night or submission of the night here. And he goes up against Paul Craig. And Paul Craig didn't even let him do the high five at the beginning of the fight. Paul Craig,
what an interesting boy.
He
looked like he just came out of the mountains from somewhere and then said he was a kung fu guy. How interesting was that?
Yeah, I mean, Tony, I know it's not so much in boxing where they do the touch of gloves after the initial bell. You know, sometimes they'll do it when the ref is there. But, I mean, we're talking about after the bell and they're supposed to be going at each other. Most MMA fighters at the beginning of the fight will tap gloves. You know, it's like a traditional thing. So Luis goes to tap Paul's gloves and Paul taps his face right off the bat. And it was like no coming back. No coming back from that. That was setting the tone, and Luis was just like, oh, I'm in a fight all of a sudden. And just never caught up. It was unbelievable. And he got caught in an armbar in the second round.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I just don't know if De Silva had a bad night or if Paul Craig is really something special. Because, you know, the Europeans are catching up on the ground game. They'll never quite have our wrestling foundation, I don't think. But still, this guy's jiu-jitsu supposedly was off the charts, and he proved it. So, I think he was 9-0 in Europe, but, well, let's see what he does here. Well, he sure did look pretty good.
And Silva gets his show money, but no win bonus and no performance of any kind bonus.
What's that saying?
Wake up.
Don't count your chickens before they hatch. Don't get your bonus money. In the bank.
Yes, not so much money to come back to Brazil with this time. Good luck next time. Cole Miller also, as much as he had some issues with the UFC and complaints, did not show a whole lot of heart and effort and skill either, really, against Masuto Hirota. He just looked very stale. And Hirota got the unanimous decision in that one.
It's getting back to what Teddy Atlas ism, and that's a new word I just made up. But like Teddy would always say constantly, if you're not going to fight tall, why be tall? Right. And Cole's height advantage seemed to work against him.
Yes, it did.
Because the Japanese fighter was just so much more powerful, just threw him around. Cole could not do anything off his back. Kind of sad seeing that.
Yes, it was. And then we had Alan Juban beating Mike Perry by unanimous decision. It was not really all that entertaining, but it was a good fight.
Well, again, that's an example. The word from a couple of my old gym mates was, watch this Perry guy, because of his intensity. It's almost Mike Tyson-like intensity, how he just charges all the power. But as we know, technique, accuracy and timing can just put a stop to that. Juban had to fight a perfect fight, and he pretty much did. I was very impressed by him.
And Uriah Faber had a fantastic final fight. That's how you pick your good opponents for the last fight. Brad Pickett came to fight, of course, but just was outmatched from the beginning, and could never really catch up again, like De Silva. Just had a rough start and just never recovered.
Yeah, did you notice, Rich, talking about evolution, did you notice a new trend now is trying the Muay Thai roundhouse kick down at the ankle area?
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen much of that. That's and he landed a few of those, and Uriah did not like that at all. he got to the ground. That obviously did not tickle.
Yeah.
But we'll see if that's something new coming along.
Yeah, always like to see different techniques. And then a lot of people were using the rhyming here of the two competitors who lost the co-main events here. The Paige and Sage was a failed bet by the UFC, I think was one headline, because Sage Northcutt lost by rear naked choke 1 minute and 40 seconds into the second round against Mickey Gall, who called Sage out, said he didn't like his corny haircut. Right after he beat CM Punk, I believe it was. He didn't like his corner.
Yeah.
He thinks he's overrated.
What do you think about Sage at 170? Was it my imagination, or did he look like it was almost a different weight class?
Yeah, he was sick going into that one, too, so he did not look. He looked worse in that one. But this one, he just looked undereducated, number one, and just outclassed by really raw talent, basically.
Mickey Gall knows, he just knows what style is going to work for him. Same thing he did against CM Punk. Mickey Gall's definitely the real deal, but it just seemed like the physicality hurt Sage so bad. And I'm questioning, first off, now Gall's talking about going to 155. I don't understand why. He looks like he's big at 170. And what is Sage Northcutt doing at 170? It looks like he could get down to 155 bone structure, but my observations on it, again, the same problem. He has to get that ground game down.
Yep. And, you know, one of the favorite things about that fight for me was watching the two of them trash talk each other in the cage. They were really talking smack, almost to the point where you could just about hear it.
You know, here's another example, though. Sage is only 20 years old. And, again, when these critics come out and just start tearing him to pieces, I don't know, he catches so much flack. I guess it's like the teacher's pet syndrome. He's Dana's teacher's... He's the teacher's pet of Dana, I guess. You know, it's kind of the vibe that I get. But, come on, he's only 20. Come on. He's got a lot to learn. I mean, he knows what he's going to have to work on. But I still think 155 would be better for him.
Could be, definitely. All right, we got a couple boxing stories. And then I think that's about it for us tonight. more boxing stories just came in. Breaking news! Amir Khan is going to start a boxing league, team league, in Britain in 2017. Breaking news, Tony's moving to Britain. No.
Yeah.
MMA is getting bigger and bigger, Khan said, and he's already a stakeholder in Indian MMA promotion Super Fight League. He said, fighters like Conor McGregor are making a lot of noise. MMA is hitting some high numbers on pay-per-view. Oh, this is a team-based mixed martial arts. Sorry. I guess it's not a boxing story, except for Mir Khan being involved. So he's going to call it the Super Fight League, which I would think there is already one, but I guess not. This is Super Fight League. He's 30 years old, believe it or not, is Khan, and obviously trying to get into the business side of fighting. He says, I am always going to be involved in boxing, but to have my foot in the door with MMA is brilliant! Was he trying to get this sponsor, Guinness? The brilliant guys?
Yeah.
The market is massive for us, says Khan. We want to reach countries like India with a population of 1.2 billion people.
Smart.
And also, Khan is rumored to be in talks with a fight with Kell Brook. But Khan said that Brook is not a big enough name for him to fight, but has since changed his mind after the Sheffield fighter's battle with Gennady Golovkin. Now he says it's a fight that I would love to have. I've changed my mind because of the Triple G fight. Kell was smart taking that fight. He knew he was going to get beat, but he still took it because he knew he was going to get paid well and make a name for himself. So.
You know, that's true. The Indian market's been pretty much untapped. All right, Rich, here's some trivia. What is India's main martial art? Do you know?
India's main martial art? I'd say Muay Thai.
Yeah.
Muay Thai!
I don't... They have something, but there's a lot of sticks involved, you know, kind of that stuff. It's strange, like a hybrid of stick fighting and grappling, and I'm trying to think of the name of it offhand.
You're sure you're not thinking of Thailand? That's called caning. No, just
kidding. And we'll see. I mean, there's sure a lot of people there.
And here's the final story. It is a boxing story. I know Tony's going to be drop dead, faint on the floor, shocked at this one. But Paul Spadafora has been arrested again. Shock, right? Breaking news. Shock.
Shock. Shock.
This time he's in jail for allegedly...
What was that story?
Allegedly stabbed his brother and then fought with police officers who were called to intervene in Pittsburgh. Tony's favorite city.
You know, that is never a good move. Yeah. That is never, ever, 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 ever. That's like when security or the cops are trying to remove someone and they scream at him, get your MF hands off me. You know the guy's nuts. And you know you're in for some good entertainment watching it. But you know, someone is out of their mind when they're screaming after a police officer, get your MF hands off me. Oh, Spadafore, I hate to hear that. What a wasted talent.
Yeah, he stabbed his brother in the thigh Wednesday night, and then he refused to cooperate once officers arrived, and also charged...
And he had that style that could just stick it on.
Oh, say that again, Tom? Tom, you there? Hello? Are we losing you? Hello? Can you hear me now? Anyway, he allegedly threatened police, told his mother, get all their names, I know they have to live in the city, I'm going to kill them. Police used a stun gun on Spadafore after he attempted to throw something at them, and they put a mask on him after he tried to spit on the officers. He was jailed overnight on charges including aggravated assault, terroristic threats, and aggravated harassment by a prisoner, according to online court records. Unbelievable stuff. This time of year is always very emotional for families and family members, and we will patiently await to give further comments after the arraignment, but before the preliminary hearing, said the defense attorney. Spadafora is still in jail as of early Thursday, unable to immediately post the $100,000 bail. Has a history of aggressive and drunken episodes and once served 13 months in a state prison boot camp for the shooting of his then-girlfriend in 2003. He agreed in May to take anger management classes to resolve charges that he put a woman in a headlock at a Pittsburgh-area bar, drank her beer, and then threw her down when she went outside to call police. Police contend that Spadafora baited patrons at the Redstone Tavern in Crafton on April 7th before grabbing the woman, though his attorney questioned whether the 63-year-old woman started the fight. So, pretty crazy stuff. Unbelievable. But anyway, he won the vacant International Boxing Federation lightweight belt in August 1999 when he was 23, but he had to give up the belt after he was charged with shooting his girlfriend in October of 2003. He was convicted and then was paroled in April 2006 after his boot camp sentence. He was later arrested for violating his parole by violating protection from abuse order the same girlfriend obtained in 2007, and he twice pleaded guilty after drunken driving arrests in 2011. Not the greatest human being on the face of the earth, for sure. So, big surprise. Paul Spadafora arrested again. Let's hope they lock him up and throw away the key this time, huh? Maybe not a good idea to have this guy out in society. Anyway. That's the news. All right, folks, for Psychic Tom Paget and Tony the Tornado Pinnacal, myself here, Rebel Rosenbridge Bergeron, we're going to sign off for the night, and we're going to see you after the holidays. We'll be able to hear our next show, and lots of stuff going on. We got a big Ronda Rousey fight, Ronda and Amanda Nunes there. That's a pretty big, huge fight going on at the end of the year, and lots of other stuff to talk about next year. So see you next year, folks. Thanks for stopping by.